Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante. He is Chris Buchanani. Chris, how are we doing this week?
Doing well, Jim. Thank you. It's always a pleasure to be here.
Well, always great to have you. You know what, Chris? It's the off season, and I actually get the question quite a bit. You do a lot of Penn State stuff too. And the question is, oh my goodness, what do you have to talk about during the off season? But in some ways, I enjoy the off season more because we could get into a lot more than just game details, you know, what happened this week at the gate. We could really sink our teeth into a lot of different topics affecting not just Penn State, but all of college football, Chris.
Yeah, there's no question. And look, to be honest, there's very little offseason left in the world of college football. It is getting closer and closer to the NFL model where they have some tentpole event or news story that you lead up to, then you cover. Then you cover the aftermath, then you move into the next one, you know, and it's going to continue to be that way. And to your point, the sport is changing so much, and that's going to trickle down and affect all of college sports, which is interesting to a subsection of the college football audience. So yeah, there's plenty to talk about and an opportunity to discuss it in depth that you do not have in the preseason or during the college football season, which again, also now lasts like 6 months, it feels like, with all the playoffs.
Well, I'll tell you what, we're going to get to a lot of things that are going on in the news and college football. But before we get there, I got an email this past week from one of our listeners. And by the way, I love getting email from our listeners. Any kind of reaction, good, bad, indifferent. Obviously, I prefer good, but we'll take even the critical emails. But
if they're complaining, they're listening, Jim.
That's right. Well, we got an email from a listener named Chuck who says he's a longtime listener to your program. I love what you're doing. You are outstanding. Chuck, that is a great way to start an email, okay? Just let me put that out there.
Now, there's Chuck, no accounting for taste.
That's true. Well, Chuck is actually 92 years old. So that's the other thing. I like the fact that Chuck makes me feel young. Okay. And, but Chuck has a question. He says, I have a question I'd like to pose for you and Chris. So obviously he's aware that you, Chris, are a student of Penn State football history. The question is, was Joe Paterno's conservative play calling in the fourth quarter against Alabama in the 1979 Sugar Bowl championship game cost them the national championship? Now, Chris, over the years, it's almost become a cliche that Joe Pa conservative play calling in that game for number one, Penn State number one versus Alabama number two in the Sugar Bowl. Now, I know I lived through it. I watched the game live. I remember it. You were a little too young for that, but I know in your but in your study of Penn State football, you told me you actually have watched the full game a couple times.
Yeah, I've watched it a couple of times. It's on YouTube, I think. And I think, Jim, I actually even watched it on, if you remember this station, ESPN Classic. Had one of those sub ESPN channels and they had like five different stations under ESPN. They'd show the old games.
Well, and watching the game, just to give a little background for people, and I'm sure there's a lot of people who do not remember 1979. There was no playoff at the time. Bowl games happened. There were some commitments to bowl games, Rose Bowl, Big Ten, Pac-10, the Sugar Bowl was hosted by the Southeast Conference champion. The Orange Bowl, I think at the time, was a Big Eight. And then you had independents like Penn State, especially being the number one team. Chris, they had a choice of where they would go. So they could have gone to the Orange Bowl and played Oklahoma. But There actually was Bear Bryant, coach of Alabama, literally called Joe Paterno to try to get him to play Alabama in the Sugar Bowl so it would be a game for number one. The final score was 14-7, and the controversial play calling was in the fourth quarter. Penn State was down 14-7. And the course of events, because a lot of people misremember this, I went and looked it up. Penn State had first and goal from the 8-yard line. They ran the ball on first down for a yard or two. They threw the ball on second down. Scott Fitzke, there's a name for old Penn State fans to remember, looked like he was going to score. The Alabama defensive back came up, made a great play to tackle Fitzke at the 1-yard line. So it was third down from the one. Matt Sui gets the call on third down, reaches over. If there were replay, Chris.
In.
Okay. There's the answer to my question. Yes, if reviewed, I feel like Sui was in the end zone. They ended up marking him a foot short. And then fourth down, it was Mike Gooman over the top. Chris, to this day, the expression Gooman over the top, my brothers and I still repeat that. There was no doubt he was stopped cold on that play. So that's where the questioning of Joe Pa's play calling comes in. I think we had, you know, history repeating itself this year against Ohio State, you know, the conservative play calling. And I've had people say to me, hey, you're a foot away from the goal line. What else are you going to call? What's your take?
I think generally that's where my philosophy is. If you can't get less than a yard against any defense in the country, like I don't know what to tell you. And so, yeah, I tend to be in that camp. Now, about this sequence in particular, I know it infamously, this loss stuck with Joe probably more than any other in his entire career. It really haunted him. And I think led him to question himself and his coaching probably more than any other. Now, one of those last two down, the fourth down, was just talk him out of it, which was a little uncharacteristic for Joe. You know, I think normally the idea is the assistants want to be a little bit more wide open and Joe would put the clamps down. But I think it was not so much that he lost the game to Bear, which had all kinds of implications for Joe and his psychology, but that he was inclined to do something different and he let his subordinates talk him out of it. And it didn't work. And I think that was an issue for him probably right up until the confetti fell in the Superdome in 83.
Well,
hold on, let me stop. I'm just going to, this is a pet peeve of mine. I'm sorry. I apologize to everybody for transgressing on one of my personal rules. 82. Okay. Bowl game goes with the season that got you there. I'm sorry. I apologize. I shouldn't have even said it. This is 1982 national championship. That was the 1982 Sugar Bowl. That's my rule. I'm sticking to it. Sorry.
And you know what, Chris, as you were saying the sentence, I was in my head, I wonder if he's going to say 82 or 83.
Yeah. It's just stupid. I can't believe I did that. Anyway, I want to derail the conversation. Back to the Sugar Bowl. The 78 Sugar Bowl.
Yes. So with the Sugar Bowl, the Gooman over the top, what's interesting, and I probably have shared this story previously on our show, but for those who haven't heard it, that was in 1979. And somewhere, I'm guessing about 5-8 years ago, maybe 10 years ago. So we're talking like 2016 or so, that kind of time frame. I got to meet Marty Lyons, who was on that Alabama defense. And it was for something completely different, not other business, okay? And I asked him about that game and that play specifically. And, of course, he had a huge grin on his face. And just as an aside, since he played for Alabama, I wanted to not like him, okay?
Sure.
He was at Alabama. Chris, he was the nicest man you ever want to meet. He was tremendous. What a nice man. But anyway, I asked him about the last play, and he said, Jim, we absolutely sold out for a run right up the middle. If your quarterback would have held on to the ball, gone around then, he walks into the end zone because we sold out. We sold out to stop him, which is all the more evidence that, you know, probably Joe Pa's instinct to do something different was probably the right instinct at that point.
Yeah, I mean, to feel in the it's all water under the bridge. I talk about this a little bit with my Penn State football history class. I say, you know, you never have perspective on stuff that's happening in the moment. There's all this talk about, well, you know, James Franklin can't win the big one and blah, blah, blah. There were criticisms that were very similar of Joe at one point. He even wrote about him in his autobiography. So they clearly stuck with him. And we now, where we're at today, view the Sugar Bowl and the failure against Alabama in the context of two national championships in the 1980s and everything that Joe went on to do after the fact. So, you know, if there's a lesson to be taken here that we can apply to the modern day, it's that winning cures all ills. And as frustrating and disappointing as that Orange Bowl loss to Notre Dame feels right now, if the kids find a way to use that for fuel and the coaches treat it as a teachable moment and it informs what they do this coming season and they win, they previously failed, and we're all going to talk about it. Another mistake, no matter what.
You know, Chris, and it's interesting too. I like the way you put it. It's you can't win the big one until you do. And it's amazing how the narrative, Alabama completely outplayed Penn State in that game, if you look at total yardage and so on. But Penn State, the narrative was, sure, they had undefeated seasons, but they were playing that Eastern schedule, nobody on it. Joe Paterno played conservative. A couple years later, the 1982 national championship team had the most difficult schedule in the country, number one. And number two, Chris, they were the first national champion to throw for more yards than they ran ever. That's changing the narrative. All right, that's it for quarter number one. We're going to get a little more contemporary when we come back. Stay tuned. Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It is quarter number two. He's Chris Buchanani. I'm Jim Galante. Chris, in quarter number one, we took that step back in history talking about the 1979 Sugar Bowl. I guess that was the 78 season that culminated in 1-2, Penn State versus Alabama. And, you know, just one last note on that game, Chris. I just want to recite the total yardage for the game because it's fascinating. Alabama actually ran the ball 60 times in that game for a total of 208 yards. So they didn't even rush for 4 yards a carry. They threw the ball. They were 8-15 for a grand total of 91 yards. Penn State, meanwhile, ran the ball 38 times for, you want to guess how many total yards they had running ball, Chris?
No.
You know, 19 yards. Throwing the ball 15-30, 163 yards. and 4 interceptions. All right. Let's move on. That's not exactly modern day football. Let's shift to today's football and today's football world. And just a little heads up, Chris, for those, and I know there are plenty of Penn State fans who are huge Matt Rhule fans. I'm sorry. I'm not going to be very kind to Matt Rhule for the rest of this show, Chris.
Well, the good news for you is after the last couple seasons at Nebraska, I think there are far fewer of those than there were a couple of seasons ago.
Yes, I think that's going to be the case. Let's start with some of Matt Rhule's comments about scheduling for out-of-conference games. Well, he's already had Nebraska cancel an out-of-conference series with, I believe it was Tennessee.
Yep.
And essentially say, Chris, there's absolutely no reason in the world to play anything but cupcakes in your out-of-conference schedule.
I mean, I don't like that result. Let me back up and say that I am now. Perception of him is probably pretty beneficial to his bottom line as the way as it matches up with his actual coaching ability. I think he's a pretty good coach. I don't think he's great. That said, this is not a personal defense of Matt Rhule or anything. I do kind of just get a little irritated, I suppose, when people come down on these guys for just speaking the truth. I think there's just a general trend in the media where people love to complain about athletes and coaches who give them nothing but canned sound bites and coach speak and cliches. But then whenever they tell the truth, they get hammered twice as hard. So the reality of it is, like, he's just doing basically what the Big Ten office and Tony Petitti is encouraging all 18 members of the conference to do, which is lighten up their non-conference schedule, because until we get these guaranteed bids, the Big Ten's trying to get paid. And that means get more teams into the playoff. And if you look at, you know, going all the way back to Washington getting into the 2016 playoffs over Penn State because they played a clown non-conference schedule, which, by the way, included Rutgers. Conference season was worse than Washington in 2016. They played a team, I didn't need adversity until they played them in football. It was like Western Illinois. I was like, that's not a real school. Come on. Not only is that not a real football team, that school doesn't even exist. This is like Bishop Sycamore on the college level. So I get it. I understand why fans are frustrated when coaches cancel these series. And then I get why people get angry at somebody like Matt Rhule for having the temerity to say the quiet part out loud. But all the guy is doing is speaking the truth. That's the way the system is set up right now. Why would you? Why would you do this? The coach is supposed to go out and schedule these sanctioned scheduling these matchups. What? Because it's good for the fans. You lose those games and you get left out of the playoffs. How many fans, Jim, are going to go on the message boards or send you emails or come up to me at Anti-Fragile Brewing Company and say, hey, yeah, I know we missed the playoffs, but I'm so glad Coach is scheduling competitive, exciting non-conference slates.
Well, here's my counter to that, Chris.
All right, let's have it.
When you talk, if he had said, gee, the system is rigged so that you're encouraged not to play a tough game, fine, but it's as if he's saying he's committed to this too, as opposed to saying, I want my team to play against a competitive team, but we're being encouraged not to make the playoffs. And the problem, though, with the argument is that I've argued often that the committee in the 10 years where it was a 4-team playoff, the committee had just a couple rules. I could give you the top 4 teams in 1 minute, okay? You're undefeated, obviously you're in. Then if you have 2 losses, you're out no matter what. Then we do the tiebreakers among the 1-loss teams. If you're from the Southeast Conference, you're in. Second best is the Big Ten, you're in. if you're from the Big 12 or ACC and you're part of that tiebreaker, you're out. Tough luck. The scheduling had nothing to do with it. So I've made that argument. But when they're using the argument this year, look at Indiana's schedule, and that's why they made the playoffs instead of Alabama. No, no, that is not why Indiana was in over Alabama. The reason Indiana was in over Alabama is Alabama lost a couple games they had no right losing. They lost to Vanderbilt, Chris, who, by the way, was in conference. Do you have any doubt in your mind that if Indiana, Alabama each had one loss, Alabama would get in above ahead of Indiana? And I'll go so far as to say one loss Indiana versus two loss Alabama, Alabama still would have made it into the playoffs, and the reason would be because of a tougher schedule. So not that it's 100% bogus, but you know what? It's at least fair to say I think the committee will take scheduling into consideration. So I think it's totally bogus to say, oh, you know, there's zero sense in playing a tougher schedule.
I think you make some good points, and there can certainly be points made about the merits of scheduling games like that. Probably Texas is the best example of that. Texas did not have an especially impressive SEC schedule, but because they went to Ann Arbor and beat up on Michigan, even though Michigan turned out to be not great, that helped them for sure. Now, to go back to your example of Indiana and their non-conference scheduling, let's just say one of those three non-conference cupcakes was replaced with Vanderbilt and they lost. No one would have even mentioned Indiana. Like, they would not have traded Alabama, the team that everybody said, but it sure as heck helped them out that they basically had three bye weeks until they got into that Big Ten schedule where they somehow magically avoided every good team in the conference except Ohio State, who they lost to. So there are arguments to be made either way. There's some subjective gray area. But look, right now, the way the system is set up, there are more opportunities for punishment than there are for rewards for scheduling what we as fans would consider compelling non-conference games.
I get that. Now, shouldn't they be looking for ways to fix this? And
I think so.
Right, and that's where I think some of it is the tone coming from these coaches. And if you have let me ask you about this. You're Nebraska, and you are not thought of like Ohio State, Oregon, Michigan, Penn State within your conference. Don't you have to do a little more to win the tiebreaker? Now, Indiana...
I was going to say Indiana indicates that you do not.
Right. But Indiana had such a schedule, a quirk of the schedule, that, you know, they ended up 11-1. Nebraska hasn't gone through the Big Ten schedule like a one-loss team, okay? They've been losing several games in Matt Rhule era. Would it not help him if Matt Rhule, if you think your team is worthy of a playoff, go play a Tennessee. Or you know what? Don't even play Tennessee. But as you suggest, play Vanderbilt. Play Auburn. Play West Virginia. Play teams that are not necessarily the elite, but are teams that have a pulse, and you have another win, a notch on your belt. But you know what, Matt? If you lose to one of those teams, you don't deserve to make the playoffs anyway.
Yeah, I see the merits of your argument, Jim, and I'm not even saying that you're wrong. I guess I don't care so much about what most coaches think about the system because, like, outside of their realm of expertise, they're not particularly illuminating thinkers. If you're the head coach at Nebraska and you're going to your fan and alumni and booster base and you're like, hey guys, we're trying to use the path of Indiana football as the measuring stick. You should probably just hang them up at that point. That's not going to be an exciting argument to that audience.
But that is essentially what Matt Rhule is doing. He's saying, hey, here's how Indiana did it. But it goes back to,
and I think the point is, if you're the head coach in Nebraska, you don't want to be selling people like, hey, we just got to make sure we get a conference schedule that's as bad as the one Indiana had in 2024.
Well, I think this actually, I'm going to point to James Franklin and some of the things that he often says about Southeast Conference. Get a ninth conference game, or we should go to eight, so it's the same. And we're running out of time for this segment, Chris, but it kind of, this whole discussion leads into the whole automatic bid argument. We'll talk about that when we come back.
And yes, I understand we are having some technical difficulties on Chris's internet side, a little bit shaky, a little bit internet interrupt us. I apologize for that. We will work on it. Hopefully when we come back, our issues will be cleared up. We shall see, but hang with us. As I said, when we come back, we're going to talk about how those automatic bids, how they play into all of this, and why these coaches want to schedule these cupcakes during their non-conference. Stick around for that.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Halt Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three of our show. He's Chris, I'm Jim. Chris, we were talking about this. Matt Rhule frustrating me, okay? He's talking about out-of-conference schedules for team. And it's the best thing in the world is to schedule three cupcakes. And Chris, the problem, and you mentioned earlier about what the fans want. And I think that's part of my frustration. What the fans want is totally irrelevant in the discussion. Do you want to see Penn State play Villanova? Or I intentionally mentioned teams like Auburn and West Virginia. As a Penn State fan, who do you want to see Penn State play? West Virginia, Auburn, or Villanova?
Yeah, no, I mean, the answer is obvious.
Yes, and I think television ratings would reflect that.
No question.
I think that here's a situation where you're talking about money, the driving force in everything that these conferences do, and make no doubt it's the conferences who run things. So I'm going to switch over to those automatic bids, which as a fan, my first instinct, Chris, is this is the devil's work for automatic bids. It's ridiculous, crazy. No way. It's totally anti-competition, all of that. But if you look at that from the perspective of, okay, if we know our conference is getting four automatic bids and it's those conference games that can get us into the playoffs and out of conference, there's still a couple out-large bids. So maybe now at Nebraska, I could take on Tennessee, because if I'm just outside the top four in the Big Ten, I need to do something to get the attention of the committee. Maybe if I play Tennessee and win that game, that merits me a playoff bid. But if I lose the game, it doesn't count against me as far as those four automatic bids go.
Yeah, I mean, when you think about all of this and you go back to who is the they who aren't taking the fans and their best interests into consideration. It's a really nebulous network of actors, right? Okay, the people who are in charge of college football, we talk about this a lot. It's a distributed network of people, many of whom kind of have conflicting interests at heart, right? And so in order to get a system that works to the benefit of the consumer, it is ideal to have like a more centralized authority in charge of things. So you look at the way the NFL operates and contrast it with the way college football does. I am sure, Jim, I'm 100% positive that everybody in the organizations, the Green Bay Packers and Philadelphia Eagles, would have preferred to open the 2024 season on their home fields against like the Browns or the Jaguars instead of carting off to Brazil or wherever they sent them. So they would play each other, play a playoff team to open their season. But the NFL said, hey guys, tough nuts. This is what we're doing in order to create an entertaining product for our consumer base. And when you talk about guaranteed bids, it does kind of remind you of the fact that when you're an NFL organization, you know that if you win your division, you're going to get into the playoffs. There's a little bit of a, you know, there's a bubble within the bigger bubble wherein your relative success can get you into the postseason. And that makes it a little bit easier to swallow the pill of, hey guys, guess what? You're going to London, you know, next week to play the New York Giants or whatever. So all of this is to say, if we're moving into this model where we're nationalizing the sport more and more, and you know, we're in many ways emulating what the NFL does with its product, which, by the way, I don't love as a college football fan. The differences to me were always some of the strongest selling points for college football as something distinct unto itself versus the NFL product. But again, we're just got that ball's rolling down the hill and it's only gaining momentum. I do think then if you apply that logic, you can actually kind of justify these guaranteed bids in the sense that there's got to be some way to level the playing field in terms of the value of wins and losses with how unbalanced the schedules are. And, you know, again, like every NFL team would love to have a soft schedule, but they just kind of get put in line by a centralized league office. I think it would be to the benefit of college football, especially given the direction that it is going, that whether people like it or not, the Big Ten and SEC wield some more power. I think just in the sense that you got to have at one point or another an authority that's empowered to sit down and say like, hey guys, Penn State playing Villanova sucks. How can we fix this up? And I do think just from the perspective of, yeah, you know, like whatever, 60 viable title or playoff contenders, we'll say playoff contenders, not title contenders, versus 32 in the NFL, you do have to be able to say like, hey guys, we're going to put you in a situation where losing to Tennessee in week two doesn't tank your playoff chances and get you fired. And this is the way we're going to do it. And it's these guaranteed bids.
So that's where, Chris, the Big Ten, Southeast Conference, and the other conferences, they're looking out for their own conference's best interest. Translation is what would make them the most money. Understanding that getting sure. playoff bids translates into money, but I would think also TV revenue. That's money. That's the definition of money.
Yeah.
And the fact that, you know what, if we do these automatic bids, you know what, now we could replace some of those out-of-conference games against Cupcake U with a Big Ten Southeast Conference challenge, which they're doing it to make money. But the interesting thing is when making money
can sell that
works for the fans' benefit.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And that can be sold separately, and the Big Ten and the SEC can collaborate on that and make money off of it, and everybody wins. Networks get better games. they get Penn State versus LSU instead of Penn State versus Nevada. The fans get those games too. Ideally, they get them in on-campus locations, so they get to make road trips and they get to experience the different cultures around the sport. You get some of the biggest brands in college football, in the SEC, in the Big Ten schools with the most largest and most passionate fan bases. And the conferences make money. And they also, I think, kind of then have a built-in understanding of like, hey, we're not shooting ourselves in the foot here. Like, they've had to put their thumbs on the scale a little bit. I agree, in the way that you say, okay, we're going to set aside X number of playoff spots for these conferences. But when you look at everything that comes out of it, I think it is still probably a net positive given the imperfect constant that is the direction of college football in this era.
Exactly. I agree. And that's where I think the media just goes off on this automatic bids and gets on the high horse. And hey, I'm right there with them. I don't like it, but you know what? You put it well. I think it's a net positive. I want to shift gears a little bit, but still, I want to have Matt Rhule as my target. And this is with the spring football games, Chris. At what point did the spring games become, as Matt Rhule puts it, a target for tampering? Because all of a sudden, at my school, I'm going to see a Nebraska player perform in a spring game and decide, oh my goodness, we need to get him to our school. If that's the way this worked, Chris, Penn State would have lost every walk-on running back that they've had for the last 20 years, because those are the guys who are the spring game superstars. And I'd recite some of the names if I can remember them.
Cole Cipriani would have been playing for the Golden Gophers. Yeah, fair. Okay. Let me ask you this, Jim. When Matt Rhule says that, when he says that's his reason for canceling the spring game, do you believe him?
No, because I don't either.
He's lying. Like, seriously, the reasoning sounds so stupid is because it's not true. It's a lie. He's making that up. Coaches hate spring games, have always hated spring games. They don't like doing them. They don't like participating in them. They don't like getting ready for them. And these guys are all paranoid lunatics. They all believe that some spy from one of their opponents is going to learn some trick of the trade about how to defend them, or how, you know, what offense to run against them or whatever from these spring games. So this just gives them a convenient excuse to do something they never wanted to do in the first place. That's my belief.
Well, the part to it, first of all, as you said, number one, it's a lie. Okay. It's a lie. Number two, what's the real reason for not wanting to do it? A risk of injury? You know what? You have all these practices. I'm sure there's some contact going on. If you look at it like, okay, our upperclassmen, last thing we need to do is risk Drew Aller or Nick Singleton or Catron Allen or deny Dennis Sutton. I've got a solution for that problem, Chris. Don't play them in the spring game, okay?
Well, sure, and probably none of those guys will play for Penn State in April, and they better not, honestly. There's no reason to play those guys at this point in their careers.
Exactly. You know what? I don't want to see Drew Aller at quarterback in the spring game. I want to see Ethan Grunkmeyer.
Right. Okay. But so here's the point where I will give a little credence to Matt Rhule, and we can pick this up in the next segment maybe. But like, Penn State does have a logjam in its running back room because we have two upperclassmen returning who many people thought were going to leave. If you don't play Nick Singleton or Catron Allen, there's going to be more, you know, whatever, Corey Smith, there's going to be more Quentin Martin. And then you do start to wonder, are you advertising to the college football world, hey, look at the skill set of these guys who could probably be pried loose from our roster?
The problem with that theory is, did these people not know Quentin Martin was pretty good coming out of high school?
That's the exact point. And I think the answer is probably yes. But I do think there is not zero truth to the idea that if he blows up and has a big game and all of a sudden there's tape on what he can do, more tape, maybe that does, you know, put a flare gun up.
I have a solution for it, Chris, and I'm going to share that with you when we come back here for quarter number four. So stick with us.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.
Welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Hulk Daddy Hazy IPA, award-winning beer by Greater Good Brewing, built by Penn Staters for PA. Look for the green can at your local retailer.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four of our show. He's Chris, I'm Jim. We were talking about Matt Rhule, coach at Nebraska, who I think just keeps saying dumb things over and over again. Him, one of the things he's doing is canceling the Nebraska spring game, which, you know, once more, these spring games are about the fans. It's a reason to come out, tailgate, all that. I know they keep talking, we'll do some kind of fan fest. Have you met one fan who said, ooh, we get to have a fan fest? Isn't that going to be better than a spring game? I've yet to hear any fans say that, Chris. But
you can I just say I've yet to hear any fan ever say they care about going into the spring game, which many of them do not. They just stay at their tailgates. I mean, people like to be inside Beaver Stadium. If they stick around to the end of the game, they like to go down on the field because they think that's cool and fun. Only the most disturbed psychopaths, such as myself, enjoy the spring game for the football and remember anything about past blue-white games that they could tell you. So, yeah, I don't think the game itself is an especially valuable product. I think it could be replaced with that, with a bit of creativity.
Well, I'm not sure what that creativity is. And Chris, by the way, this is where my argument totally collapses, okay? Totally collapses. Count me as one of those fans who's gone to the game. The tailgate is really good. You know what? I think I'll just stay out here and keep tailgating.
Sure, there's no shame in that. I mean, the whole point of the weekend is just to come celebrate Penn State and come back to Happy Valley. So, yeah, if you don't want to go in the game, don't go in. Whatever.
Yes. And you know what? Before we get to something else, because I feel like I'm conceding this debate because for my own staying out on the tailgates. But you mentioned, hey, if Quentin Martin takes off in this – a spring game, it's going to draw more attention to him tampering. You know what? Quentin Martin has a good first quarter. All right, son, you're done the rest of the way. We'll give the carries to somebody else. Okay. So nobody looks all that great. We spread it out a bit. All right. Let's move on. A couple of more topics, a couple things. As you said, it's a year round thing in the news. This is very Penn State-ish. LeVar Arrington II, he's going to wear the sticks, Chris. He's going to be wearing number 11 like his dad, like Micah Parsons, like Abdul Carter. And he's doing this as the incoming freshman. You have any issue with that?
No, I don't. I was surprised that he did it because I just sort of assumed, you know, number one, there's become this aura around the number 11, which I think is cool at Penn State. And typically it's something that, you know, like it's bestowed upon you after you've kind of gotten your feet wet and established that you're a player of the caliber to carry on the legacy of the sticks. I don't necessarily believe that as LeVar Arrington's son, that LeVar II needs to do that. You know, perfect example, Jeremiah Trotter Jr. with the Philadelphia Eagles this year wore his dad's number. He took his dad's number. I think that's cool. I just thought maybe that LeVar II might be more interested in kind of carving out his own path. And then as he started to mature and develop his own niche and his own legacy at Penn State, then maybe he'd put the 11 on, because that comes with a lot of pressure, as does his name coming to Penn State here. But I think the fact that he did choose to come to Penn State as somebody whose name is LeVar Arrington shows you that he's probably not afraid of that. So if he and his dad are cool with him getting 11 right out of the gate, I'm certainly not going to argue with him.
And I think also looking at it kind of the reverse way, Chris, that we don't know what happened internally, but the fact that the team was okay with this gets me thinking, you know what? They probably think pretty highly of this kid.
Absolutely.
And when Penn State first recruited him, he was not so highly regarded as a high school recruit, but his status kept growing as he developed in high school to the point where, you know what? Yep. Maybe, Chris, just maybe, he's prepared to take that on.
Yeah, you know, I was actually just watching Michael Jordan famous speech, just about his son of LeVar Arrington, and then you come to Penn State where your dad's a legend. And so it's really all about how do you process and handle that type of a situation. And there, I'm perfectly happy to defer to the kid and his family. And so if he wants to wear that 11 right out of the gate, I think it's awesome and more power to him.
And my deference is to the team being okay with it, because I think that's also a message.
Sure.
If they really didn't think he could perform, he doesn't have to be his dad. He doesn't have to be Micah. He doesn't have to be Abdul Carter. But if he can represent the number well, that to me tells me something, that the team feels that way. All right, Chris. Next up, I don't think we had a chance to talk about this yet. With the player compensation that's coming, where the schools are going to be able to pay the players, and they have a formula. I think it's a percentage of media or television revenue. The calculation comes out to like $21 or $22 million that they would be able to share with the student athletes.
Yeah.
Well, student athletes, does that mean you're giving money everywhere to everyone? And does Title IX factor into this? Title IX is the rule that's been in effect for about 50 years, where the benefits for the female athletes has to match that for the male athletes.
Well, just to be clear, that Title IX has nothing to do with, there's no mention of college athletics in Title IX, but it has been interpreted to apply to college athletics because universities are recipients of federal funding.
So they have as many female athlete scholarships as male athletic scholarships, which then came up with the thought, okay, with this new ruling that will probably come about soon, which allows the schools to compensate their student athletes, would Title IX have any effect on this? Meaning you'd have to give the same amount of money to the female athletes as to the male athletes. The prior administration said, yes, that would be the case. There's a new administration who says the opposite. I think this is ultimately going to end up in court no matter what, Chris.
In all likelihood, yes.
But I've seen now where the Southeast Conference schools are already saying, you know what? Here's how this is going to work.
Yeah.
70% of the money is going to go to football, 20% to basketball, and then the last 10% will be spread among the rest.
Yeah. And I think that's probably how it'll end up being. When the Biden administration Department of Education issued that guidance, I said, this is not only is there going to be a transition in administrations, but this is just DOA, I think, when it gets into court, because the idea that you're going to take this media revenue, which is generated almost exclusively by football, and say, okay, now we're just going to divide it up equally among everyone. I just don't think that was ever going to pass the smell test. So I think all the schools that are moving forward with the idea that they're going to distribute this money based on the idea that the bulk of it, which is brought in by football, will benefit, will be reaped by football, I think they're fine to do that. And honestly, I think that's right. And this is speaking as somebody who's a big, big time supporter of Olympic sports and women's sports. I having said that, I don't think it's at all unreasonable to look at this and say, okay, literally the entire apparatus of Olympic sports at Penn State, at least, is paid for 100% by football. Football is paying for any of these things to even exist. To then say that, okay, now we are going to start sharing the benefit of the revenue that is generated by the efforts and the talents and the physical risks undertaken by these athletes. We're going to share that with them. The bulk of that should go to the people who are undertaking the biggest risks and generating like all of the revenue that's paying for everything. It's not unreasonable. It's not unfair. There's still going to be some. There's still going to be a sliver of it that's paid out to the Olympic sport athletes. And I think that's great. And if I had to bet, I would bet if you polled them, the vast majority of them would say that's great. You know, I'm sure they'd love to make more money, but if we're talking about any semblance of fairness, the bulk of it should be going to the football players.
Yes. And, you know, you talk about the physical nature, the risk that you run in playing football. Agreed. I think that's part of it. But I don't think it should be part of this argument, because someone's going to tell me how some other sport, how hard they work.
And they do. But football's still paying for them to be there. Let's not forget, football's not going to stop paying for the Olympic sports.
That's the point, Chris. That's where the revenue comes in. It's coming in from football. So that's where the money should go. That's just the way of the world.
Right. Like, my concussion risk pays for you to be here. Your concussion risk doesn't fund my football program. I'm just being honest. I'm being straight up. And again, this is somebody who's really supportive of trying to keep these 31 varsity sports.
And that is the point. This is where the revenue comes in, and you can't read it any other way. You know, and it's not about women's sports. It's about any of the other sports.
Absolutely.
How much revenue does men's golf bring in, Chris?
Nothing. Zero. None of these sports generate any revenue. They all cost money.
That's the point right there. It's football that generates the revenue. That's why those players are going to get compensated, and rightfully so. It will end up in court, because it always ends up in court, Chris. Everything ends up in court. But I think this is fine. This is the one where there is no justification for going the other way with it. Chris, that is it. That's going to be the final word. Thank you, Chris. Thank Chuck for his question about the Penn State Alabama Sugar Bowl all those years ago.
And we apologize for our technical difficulties. We promise to do better next time, although I'm not sure what we can do about internet issues. All right, that is it. Thank you so much for listening. Make sure that you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Every day is a great day to join us at Cafe 210 West to enjoy our daily drink specials. Mondays, it's the Cafe Tea Pitcher for $5. Tuesday, Smirnoff Pitchers for $7. Wednesday, Bacardi Pitchers are $7. And Thursdays, enjoy Cafe Tea Pitchers for $5. All week, we have half-off draft beer and cafe tea from 9 to 11 p.m. and 6 to 8 p.m. on Fridays. So get the gang together and come on down to Cafe 210.